17, I'm not going to read all of it, I'll tell you a lot of it, that you may look at some stuff there. Yeah, pastor's got a physical Bible in his hand. Yeah, cool. Thank you all for your prayers. We made it back safely, obviously, but a lot of stuff could have gone bad, so thank you for praying for us. We got everybody where they need to be, and I appreciate it. So that's a big Bible. Okay, figure it out here. We're continuing our series, The Way of Faith, and I titled the sermon today, Big Faith. And the question I have for you, how big is your faith? And let's just get real. We talked about the faith of a mustard seed, so it's not how much you can believe. It's the big God that we believe in. And we've been talking about asking the question, is something gaining mastery over you? Is there an opposition in your way or an obstacle? Are you living a conquering faith? And Jesus keeps telling us that we are more than conquerors. And so we need to understand that. And then we sometimes look at the size of our opposition and the size of the things that are going on, and we get discouraged and we forget to look at who we're having faith in. And if we have a faith in the one true God, we serve a big God. And so he can handle whatever. Larry was telling me when I was reiterating our story of how I got back here from Wyoming. And I don't know why I was so calm about it during the time, but it's just like, okay, God's got this. He must be protecting me from something. But so last Sunday, and I'm picking on Larry, but Larry said at least I have a friend. So I had a friend bring me to the airport. I don't want to introduce him to any of you all because he's my drinking buddy. I'm just teasing, okay? All right? I'm mouthy and tired, so you're going to get a lot of extras. Okay, anyway. So he takes me to the airport in Springfield. I got a flight to Denver and then the town next to where my kids are from. So I get to the airport. Everything's going well. I'm there at Springfield Airport. Exciting place to be for 4 hours. Yeah, not really. Okay. Pizza was okay. But anyway, so my flight to Denver got delayed. So that meant my flight to Wyoming was gone. And actually, so I spent the night in Denver. No, not in the airport. I have spent the night in airports, and I'm at the age of a hotel room looks good. And in fact, if I'd made it to my son's house, I'd be sleeping on the floor in an empty apartment. So I did okay. So then my son starts driving from his town, and I had to get a flight to Laramie, which is on his way, so he can pick me up. And I fly out to Laramie, and anyway, so my son takes off, and then he's pulling his car. Heather and the kids, they took a jet back, and they're at some resort. No, they left the day before. They're fine, whatever. They went to Disney World Land the whole day. I don't know what was going on. But anyway, so my son starts his trip to meet me at Laramie, which is 4 hours from where he's at. He's pulling his car with the U-Haul, and you can only go 55, which is fine, but it's got bare tires on it. Pops a tire in the dark, in the rain, has to change it, then put the spare on. It was a bigger spare. He gets to me, Labor Day weekend, you know, so he can't get tires, and spoiler alert, his car takes specialty tires, so that's even better. Those always take 2 days to order, for those of you that have been there. So anyway, so we drive 55 through the night, make it Tuesday morning at home, and I go to bed till 1 in the morning, 1 in the afternoon, whatever it is. And we get in at 9 on Tuesday morning. Then I wake up, Heather's like, you didn't hear that tire pop? My son took the U-Haul and popped the tire, broke the rim, blocking the driveway. So anyway, he's making 50 million trips, and I'm like, I'm going to drive the truck around. We can just load this thing. So I say all that, one of those things, I don't know, maybe I was too tired or whatever, I haven't achieved stuff, but, you know, one of those things will throw especially us men off. And so your prayers, appreciate it, because I love driving 15 hours on a spare in a U-Haul, going 55, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, your prayers, we talk about the things that get in our way, and we're like, this is too big for me. See what I'm saying? we serve a big God. We need to have a big faith, and you can choose either to have it our way and have a small faith, or you can choose to have a giant faith and do it God's way. And so your action step today is have big faith. It's in a big God. A lot of that name it, claim it crowd, they're like, if you have enough faith, that's a load of crud. Okay? We only have to have the faith of a mustard seed to move a mountain. And so, kids, if you're drawing a story of David and Goliath, this is a perfect one, the giant. And David is a boy, and your action steps today are going to spell out the word big. So I've got a two-hour sermon here, you know, so with 3 points, so we'll go from there. But Hebrews 11:32, and what more can I say? Time is too short for me to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Japheth, David, Samuel, and the prophets. And so last few weeks, we've gone from weakest to strongest, and we went from Gideon to Barak to Samson, last week Japheth, all lived in a society that was spiritually dark. They were all pushed to humility, and they all were given a great task. So that brings us to 1 Samuel 17. And I'm going to abbreviate some of this. A lot of you are familiar with this biblical account. I may stop and read some of the scriptures. But in verses 1 and 3, we see there's a big battleground. This is the Valley of Elah. It was narrow, but vast. It was a giant valley it was about a mile wide and sloped down on both sides. So you've got an amphitheater for a battle. A valley that's a mile wide, slopes down on both sides, and it's a big battleground. You got a big character in verse 4, Goliath. 9 foot tall. 9 foot tall. Your average ceilings in a home are 8 foot. So he's going around like this in your house. The doorways, I know, you know, Ollie, you're going to know that. I'm too tired to figure it out. Maybe it's 8 foot, maybe it's 6 foot. I think Heather, she's a builder. Six, thanks. Whatever. But, well, I'm not bending down when I go through. But anyway, so I'm 6 foot, but shrinking always. But 9 foot. And his brothers, he had brothers there too. They were also very tall. And so what we have to realize, a really big, oppressing character. He had big weapons. You see this, and I want you to go back this week and read this and kind of chew on it. But he had big weapons. In verses 5 and 7, he had his armor. It was heavy. It's kind of like a heavy canvas material that was interlaced and overlapping. And those of you that were raised right and been to a Renaissance fair and know about medieval things and stuff like that, and are geeks, okay, whatever. Not that I know any. But so it's leather or canvas, and when it's interlaced like a basket, it's hard for arrows and swords and stuff to get through to the vital organs. And then it had overlapping with bronze, and it stretched from his shoulders to his knees, 9 foot, so you figure it out, you know. I'd like to see his tailor, okay. And then that armor weighed about between 175 to 200 pounds. I don't know, I'm not trying to pick on anybody here, but some of you probably weigh that. Some of you a little more, maybe a little less. We'll see. See how I covered myself on that one. But anyway, that's like one of you. You pick who, okay? Everybody's looking around. Maybe they're 200, maybe they're 175, and they get in trouble. But, okay, that's just the armor. So from here to here, 200 pounds. Yeah, he's 9 foot. Yeah, he's a big guy, and he can handle it. But I weigh like 30 pounds more than that. Spoiler alert. Okay, then the helmet was bronze, and his leggings were bronze. So that's metal, so he's got this giant helmet, and then on top of his 200-pound armor are these leggings, and he's already a big character without the armor. And then his helmet weighed between 20 to 25 pounds. I know all of us are power lifters, and we just keep up with it, you know, that kind of thing. I like the 2-pound weights if we're doing this. some of you that, like my boys are like, I'm using 2025 to do this, you know, whatever. That's on his head. He's got to be able to handle it. So what a giant. What a big, scary sight. And then you go to verses 8 and 4, and again, if you're raised right and seen Rocky 4, okay, Rocky 4, it'll make you an American, man. That is awesome. Us against Russia, the whole bit, kind of thing like that. And Draco, which is the Russian fighter, you know, he goes up to Rocky and says, I will break you. You know, every day, for 40 days, Goliath is coming out and saying, you're a bunch of wimps. Come out and fight me, and I'm going to tear you apart. Ever been there? The devil, what he does, wearing you down, scare tactics. This is called a representative battle. Those are kind of the better battles to do if you're a grunt soldier. Because here how it works, especially in the ancient times. It'd be like you'd have these armies with thousands of soldiers facing off. But the better way to go is this. Hey, you bring your best guy. We'll bring our best guy. Let them fight it out. And whoever wins, then they win the whole battle. I kind of like that. Okay? I wouldn't like losing. But if somebody else could fight it, good with that. Well, that's what Goliath was doing. He was their champion. And I want you to understand the world's champion and Satan's champion is going to be scary, is going to look menacing, and if you try to take on whatever you're dealing with yourself, you're going to lose. Big faith, big God, doesn't matter. So he's doing this morning and evening for 40 days. See, Satan wants to wear you down. Everybody keeps thinking, well, he's just going to come at me hard. But look at how America has taken the moral downhill slide. It's like the frog in a kettle thing, or the frog in a pot. In the sense of, like a hot tub, something got louder here, so okay. In a hot tub or whatever, you know, can't get them hot enough anymore. Don't get into that. But if you put a frog in a kettle or a pot, excuse me, and keep up in the water slowly, they're never going to know that they're being cooked to death. Oh, yeah, you're sick, Pastor. Well, whatever. Okay, here's the deal. That's how Satan works. We all think Satan's just going to hit us straight on. There's going to be crosses burning in the front yard. There's going to be devil horns and all this stuff. No, the reason America's in the shape it's in is it's made a slow slide on the way to hell. Fifth largest lost nation in the world. That's not good. And I'm going to blame a lot of the spiritual leaders and a lot of the churches in America that have decided to go against God's word. And so what's happening here is we see an example of how Satan works. I'm going to put a big object that's scary in your path, and I'm going to wear you down. Can you imagine their morale? How they felt 40 days? And this is how the enemy works. John 10:10, the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. But I come to give you life and to give it to you abundantly. Big threats, his haunting size, his strength, and his, let's just put it this way, his smack talking for 40 days. He come out there in the morning, and then he come out there in the evening, and this is what Satan does. And a lot of you have been there or there. Satan is yapping at you, wearing you down. And then you go to 2 Timothy, and it talks about God's not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a strong, sound mind. Big obstacles we encounter don't just come but once, but they come continually to wear us down, like fear, worry, our past. Relentlessly trying to intimidate us, magnified his goal was to relentlessly try to intimidate them and magnify our faults and our weaknesses and that we can't do it in our own strength. And spoiler alert, we can't. We do all things through Christ who gives me strength. Then you have a big character, David. And you see that in verses 17 and 18. David lived about 10 to 15 miles away. He was a shepherd in the Judean mountains. A and Bethlehem, and around Bethlehem. And this is symbolic of the shepherd king that Christ is. And we need to really understand, a long time ago we went through A Shepherd Looks at the 23rd Psalm. And when you understand how Jesus keeps calling us sheep and he's the shepherd, sheep are helpless. And they need a shepherd. You know, we kind of adjusted on the farm, and I'm not going to have sheep because they're high maintenance. They are helpless. They're good to eat, but we won't get into that, especially the lambs. Oh, Pastor, but it is true. Okay? But the thing about it is they're helpless, and you need a shepherd king. That's kind of an oxymoron. Shepherd gingerly takes care of his flock. A king is ultimate and ruler, and David was a shepherd that became a king. And through the line of David came Christ, who will shepherd our hearts, and a king. So he had big, as a shepherd, he had big, David had big concerns to carry out. He was in charge of his father's flock, and Jesus was in charge of his father's flock. And he had to take care of his family. And this sounds familiar, that he had to do that too. And what's interesting, so David's taking care of the family farm. His brothers are out in battle, and they're 40 days getting worn down. And then Dad says this, I'm abbreviating. Yes, it's not in the original Hebrew. Go take him some bologna sandwiches and some chips. Make sure it's got a hot cheese, and some of you don't like onions, you know who you are, with mayo and chips and all that stuff, and some pops. They probably need something. Go take it out and see what's going on there. And so David, young boy, you see a big reception in verses 22 and 24. They're at day 41, and David's at day 1. His first day to be on battlefield, right? He's just bringing chips and soda and seeing what's going on. And he's watching Goliath do his regular thing on day 41, yelling, taunting, and everybody else is running. Boy, he doesn't get a good reception from his brothers. I know our family always treats us well. And I come from a big family, three other siblings, and you know, it's funny. So his brothers have been worn down. This is just the kid brother, the baby, and David, we'll get into this in a minute, he's focused on, why are you guys waiting around here? I believe in God. Why aren't you just like taking this care of this problem through God? It's not that David was any better, but guys, it doesn't take much faith if you're just going to trust God and trust him to handle it. So his brothers are basically telling him, what are you doing here? You're just, why are you here? And you're just being a problem, and you need to shut up and you need to go home. That's in verses 22 and 24. And so we're at day 41. And so Saul, which is a whole other story, he's the king of Israel, and he's on his way out because he tried to help God out instead of having faith and being obedient to what God said. And so Saul isn't discerning that well, and so he's got to put some incentive in there to get somebody to challenge Goliath. All right? And so nothing like throwing your daughter in there. Hey, if you go and defeat the Goliath, you can marry my daughter. And also, now this might have been incentive, even though we probably all die, because I don't know any 9-foot people in our church that have a good size armor. Yes, I understand a 9mm or a Gatling gun would help there, or at the Alamo, but we won't get into that. We can't go back in time. But here's the deal. With 9-foot person, he's trying to get, you can marry my daughter, and boy, he's going to sweeten the pot. You're going to marry my daughter and you'll never pay government taxes again. That's tempting even if I die. You know, think about it. No more taxes. Everything for you is tax-free. That would be good. And so with that, guess what happened? No takers. 41 days. A big opponent. See what I'm saying? I've had to learn the verses I've decided to concentrate only on Christ Jesus and his death on the cross. 1 Corinthians 2:2, Isaiah 26:3. He will keep in perfect peace all whose thoughts are fixed on him. If you do not stay so tucked in and close to God every day, you're going to be just like Israel. Worn down, running the other way. It doesn't matter that you're not paying any taxes anymore. You ain't going to budge. So he had a bit. Saul was a bad leader. You know, I said he was a big man. He was what they wanted to look like, but he wasn't God's choice. Israel chose a king instead of letting God be their king. He wasn't walking with God. And when we tolerate sin in our lives, and we try, the enemy will take territory. I want you to think about that. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. When we do not have faith in God, when we do not obey God, we are giving the enemy territory in our lives. And Saul is a perfect example. Tried to do it himself, didn't trust God, didn't obey. And the enemy will move into your camp, and he will take your thoughts off of God and put them on yourself and what's in front of you. Sound familiar? That's a big list of my travel things that went wrong. And all I can explain is not because I'm some saint, but it's just like maybe the time God's grown me, it's like, well, God's probably saved me from a wreck or something just sitting here, you know, or whatever. I just wanted to be safe. But so many times this is what the enemy does. How am I going to fix this? And us men are really good about this. Not that I've learned it, but a lot of times our wives just want us to listen and not fix the problem. But we do this with God too. I got to do it. I got to fix it. Guess what? That's what the enemy wants. Not on big faith and a big God. So then the big family issues, you see, you know, they were jealous of. So David's, he's like, why are we not doing this? And then you see in verse, I think it's verse 28, you know, the oldest son is just telling him to be quiet and to not do that. And what we have to understand is conquering by faith, we still are going to have opposition. See, you could be like, I'm trusting God. This never happens. It's never happened to me in church life and in Christianity. But God's telling me something, not because I'm a pastor. I'm just Russell trying to follow God. Everybody around you. And it's not like I have a big faith. I'm trying to trust God, and I struggle just like the rest of you. But this happens sometimes within, too, with other believers. God's telling you to do something. Everybody else is trying to figure out how to do it. His brother was like, you need to shut up and get out of here. You're just causing problems. And David's like, well, God said he would do this, so why are we not doing it? I don't care how long we've been with God. It doesn't matter our physical age. There's a lot of people that have been with Jesus a long time, walking with Jesus, and they're still spiritual babies. You go back to Josiah, who was 8, and he understood how to obey God. Spiritual maturity does not have an age limit on it. You need to obey God regardless. And so, what made the difference for David? It was his past experiences. He was a shepherd, very lonely, long periods of time by yourself, and you're the only one protecting the sheep, and he didn't have a Creedmoor, he didn't have a 270, and their tribe of Benjamin, their tribe were good with slings and stones, and so he had to be pretty accurate. And so he's telling them in verse 37, well, you know, I killed a bear, I killed a lion. I think we can take care of this guy. Now, I want you to understand, it's all God. But don't you think he trusted God to help with that bear, and he trusted God to help him with that lion? And God was preparing him in those quiet times, taking care of those sheep, to take care of Israel, to lead and protect them. So he's telling them, when we're faced with new giants, we need to remember what God has already done. All right, here's your first fill-in. If you think Pastor forgot, get ready. Having a big faith means having a big faith in a big God. See, a lot of people are trusting small gods, little g. Their money, their health, their relationships, their own strength. They're all going to fail you. Having a big God means we use what he has given us and trust him. So then we have a big blunder. You see in 37. Saul's like, okay. Saul doesn't get it. I got to help you out, David. You can't just go out there. Do you think we did VBS and we went over the armor of God. Do you think physical armor or God's armor is going to protect you more? God's armor. But Saul, being away from God, trying to fix it himself, he goes in. Can you imagine? David wasn't that tall. He was a boy. And Saul was tall and good looking and everything on the outside. But David was a man after God's own heart. Saul goes in. Well, we got to put this armor on him. And none of it fits. And so we got to realize, what are you trying to defeat that enemy with? Your strength, your resilience, whatever, because it's all going to play out. And you're going to get to the point where you are empty. So why don't you start with the fact of, if I'm going to get through it, it's going to have to be my faith in a big God. And so Saul tries to fix it, and then we get to 40. And so we see in verse 40, God honors our faith. I'm going to look at 40 here. I don't know if that's the one. Just a sec here. I could do it on my iPad, but then I'll cover my notes. Okay. So, verse 40, and don't worry about getting up there. You got all got your Bibles open, so you're just following along. I just know you are faithfully, those of you that are awake. Instead, he took his staff in his hand and chose 5 smooth stones from the wadi and put them in the pouch in his shepherd's bag, and then with his sling in his hand, he approached the Philistine. Now, everybody's like, why did he do 5 stones? Because Goliath had brothers. It wasn't the fact I need 5. He had brothers, and they were there. I think they were a bunch of, would you like to have been their mama feeding them growing up? We had 2 cows tonight. One, we milked them first, then we slaughtered them and we ate them. Okay, whatever, you know. But that's why. It wasn't the fact of, I'm not going to trust God, but just in case these guys decide to come, I need to make sure I got a full magazine. So anyway, here we go. So he honors our faith, and so David is trusting God. And he stands before Goliath in faith and will win the battle. God is waiting for us to trust him so he can empower us to battle over our giants. He's waiting for us to trust him. He's waiting for us to have big faith in a big God. And Romans 8:31 says we can stand. If God is for us, who can be against us? And Ephesians says when all you can do is stand, stand. What are you standing on? Your physical strength or your ability to endure something? Or are you standing on the rock, Jesus Christ? If the glory of the Lord is your rear guard, he's got this. Your next villain, we can have a big faith in a big God because he is an immovable God. Same yesterday, today, and forever. David's this boy. He's ruddy. Okay, that's what the Bible says. Maybe it was red hair. He didn't look like the rest. He probably looked like a runt in a way, and especially being a boy. So now it's like you got a, okay, I'm 6 foot tall, and so Goliath is 3 foot taller than me, so I'm going to look really small. So let's say David was 5 foot. Imagine that picture. And then if you're wearing 200-pound armor and then other stuff, and your spearhead is 20 to 25 pounds, and you have an arm, a shield bearer, can you imagine how big his shield is to cover his vitals? And he's got a person that is carrying that, and you're this high, no armor, 5 rocks and sweat. You better be trusting in God that's the same yesterday and today, because in our flesh, that's not going to work. And then verses 41 through 45, the intimidation begins. The bigger giants we face, you know, and David's eyes of faith were not on himself, and they weren't on Goliath, but they were on a big God. He knew the battle was the Lord's. And so I think I had another verse in there on the slides. I think it's like... Yeah, there we go. David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with a sword and a spear and a javelin. Did I come against you in the name of the Lord of the armies of the God of the ranks of Israel? You have defied." This is the problem with American Christianity. We've got to go with culture because they're not going to like us. And we all want to be liked. And it's not about, and it's through kindness that leads to repentance, so we don't need to be mean. But we have lost so much ground when we don't just say, "All right, you come to me with all this stuff, all these sayings and all these legal things and all what I need to do. I come to you in the name of the Lord, and guess what? I'm not backing down. You defiled him." Repentance and revival begins in the, and judgment begins in the house of the Lord. And I would say the American church, I'm not talking about a building. I'm talking about God's people. That is the church. Draw a circle around yourself and those areas that you have given ground to those giants. You need to get it right. Turn around to God, because that is why we're in the shape. And we need to have a big faith like David to call it for what it is. We have watered it down. We have let the world in. You're trying to use this stuff, and you've defiled the name of a holy God. Wow. And so David dies of faith, and we see in verses 49 and 50, he's slain versus a sword. And so we know what happens. He puts it in there, hits him right between the eyes. Can you imagine that? He just... And can you imagine a 9-foot, I bet she fell backward. I hope I wasn't behind him, or somebody wasn't behind him, because they'd be dead. Okay? A 9-foot, because that 200 pounds of armor, plus, and whatever he weighed, plus, bam. And then notice what happens, guys. Big retreat. The Philistines fled. Big reminder. Then David takes some of those things from Goliath as trophies, memorials. And we need to understand, we have spiritual markers, guys. Why does God tell us when we do prayer that we need to thank him before we ask him for things? Not because we need to thank me, but when we go back and we see the things that God has done, it helps us understand our big faith, that we can still have big faith in a big God. You showed up here. You showed up there. So why aren't you not going to show up again? And so those trophies were reminders to David, this is what God did. So your next villain, big trophies and memorials, are a reminder we have a big, giant, killing God. So I got a question for you. Today and in this season, how big is your God? Are you serving? And I know, I see, here's the deal, guys. I don't expect everybody in here, "Oh, I'm idol worshiping and I'm serving a God, little g." But you may be saved and you may know God, but you've got something going on in your life and you're trying to do it yourself, or you're trying to trust your health, your wealth, something else. How big is your God? Or you're saying, "I'll handle this, God. You handle that." How big is your God? You need to know we have a big God. Another question. How are you holding up? A lot of you guys, everybody out here, is going through some things where you're just like, you almost feel like you're getting knocked off your block. The ground feels like it's shaking. And again, we serve an immovable God. Maybe you need to get off whatever foundation that you're trying to trust to deal with what you're going with and say, "God, I don't understand it. I may not understand it. I'm going to trust you." When all you can do is stand, stand. And then lastly, one more question. You got some giants that need killing? Because we serve a giant killing God. Now, the question I have for you today, if you don't know Christ, this sermon's not going to do you any good, because the first giant that he needs to kill is you're destined for hell, which is eternal punishment and separation from God forever. And guess what? He sent his son to die for you and raise from the dead so that you can have hope. So the first thing you need to do is get saved.
Just tell him, I can't take care of myself. I'm never going to be good enough to accept Christ in your life. I'm going to do that today. But for the rest of you, I know you've got giants in your life. You may need to hit this altar. You may need to pray. And you need to have that big faith in a big God. Here's what I've learned. Here is what I've learned. It doesn't matter what's thrown at me anymore. Yes, I get it. It's the little things that get me in tizzies. But it's just like God's in control, and he knows when you're going to have the good days, and he knows when you're going to have the bad days. I think a lot of us just need to turn over what we got going on in our lives to God and have big faith in a big God. Whatever you need to do today, as we stand on our feet and have a time of meditation.